Good morning, everybody.
Namaste.
Namaste. Let's begin by finding our sit bones nice and grounded underneath us. Our spine's tall and spacious. Just take a couple of deep breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. Reset a little bit. Let's open our space this morning with the sound of three ohms. Of Shiva is this?
Nataraj?
Yeah, the Nataraj. So the Nataraj is the dancing form of Shiva. And he's doing his dance of bliss, his Ananda Tandava. And the Ananda Tandava represents the five acts of the natural world. The act of creation, the act of sustaining, the act of destruction, the act of veiling, and the act of grace or revelation. And we're going to talk about Nataraj today. And then I also am interested, the second mantra that we do, just want you guys to kind of feel into it and see if you really like it. It's actually just the first line of a much longer stotram, a much longer hymn that if you'd like, we can spend a few weeks on and dive into, kind of like we did with the Achyutastakam, the Krishna Rama Krishna mantra that we learned last year, that we kind of worked on over the course of about 2 years, but finally finished last year. And so, if you'd like to, we can dive into some Shiva lore and stories and.
Yeah,
maybe we can do that. So just kind of feel into it, too, and see how you like it. But first of all, we're going to do the first mantra. So can you say Nataraja?
Nataraja.
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 Nartana.
Nartana.
Sundara.
Sundara.
Nataraja.
Nataraja.
So Nataraja we already know. We know that this is the dancing form of Shiva. Nata is Lord and Raja is King, right? So he's the dancing Lord King, Shiva, and Nartana is a dancer. It's the word for dancer. And what's Sundara? What's Sundari?
Sundari.
So Sundara is beautiful. He's a beautiful dancer. Yeah, you'll hear Lakshmi. Referred to as Sundari quite often because she's so beautiful, right? And yeah, radiantly beautiful. And then we'll say Shivaraja.
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 Shivakami.
Shivakami.
Mm-hmm.
Priya.
Shivaraja.
Shivaraja.
So Shivakami is, Shivakami refers to Parvati. So Kama.
Sutra.
And it's the Sutra of?
Love me.
Yes, there we go. So he's... That's very good. He's the beloved of Shiva. She's the beloved of Shiva, right? And Priya is beloved. So Shiva is the beloved of the beloved of Shiva. Basically, it's kind of a play there. So Shivakami is the beloved of Shiva, who is her beloved, right? Mm. So does that make sense?
It's folding in and out.
It's folding it in and out, but that's the way Sanskrit works. It's kind of like this beautiful holograph that unfolds. So, and then we'll say Shivaraja again.
Shivaraja again.
Cute. All right. So then we're going to say Chidambaresha.
Chidambaresha.
Mm-hmm. Nataraja.
Nataraja.
And we'll say Partipuri.
Partipuri.
Shibara. Yeah. Nataraja.
Nataraja.
So these refer to two different cities. Chidambaram is a city in Tamil Nadu. And Partipuri, now I looked it up. And I really did some research on it. I couldn't find a specific citation for the city, but I kept seeing Lord of Parthi, Wanderer of Parthi, born in Parthi. And apparently, from what I could gather, and I may be wrong here, it's the birthplace of Rama.
Hmm.
And it's also a city that's devoted to Shiva. So that's what I'm thinking out of my inference, out of everything that I found. Because it's mentioned in many different mantras. It seems to be a word that's mentioned in many, or a place that's mentioned in many different mantras. However, I would like to talk about Chidambaram.
Chidambaram.
Yeah, Chidambaram.
Chidambaram.
Yeah. So this is a city in Tamil Nadu. And there's a huge temple to Shiva there, just a beautiful mandiram. And it's also a stage where they produce amazing dances in the classical Indian dance tradition. And Chid is, of course,
Chitti,
which is
energy.
Chitti, Chit.
Chitta.
Chitta. Consciousness.
Consciousness.
Yeah, it's consciousness, yeah. And Ambara is a stage.
Hmm.
So it's the stage of consciousness upon which all of life is placed.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I love the name of that city, for one thing. And there's a story about, there's a mythology about this particular area. So there's this forest. Oh, now I've forgotten the name of it. Darn it. It's a huge forest of mangrove trees. It's one of the largest mangrove swamps in India. And in this forest, there used to live a group of sages, right, who were very strict in their practices, very rigid in their practices. And they were having a big discussion one day. And the discussion was about the efficacy of ritual and mantra to control the gods. And they were saying that yes, because they were so devout in their practices that they could control the gods. Well, apparently Shiva and Vishnu both overheard this discussion. And they got a kick out of it. So they decided that they're going to take a little stroll. And you know Shiva, he's want to kind of walk around, you know, in his
in
birthday
the altogether,
suit.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, in the all together. Just letting everything shine. And he's also apparently irresistible. Like he's you know, the perfect specimen. With his dreadlocks and smeared with ashes, but irresistible nonetheless, right? And Vishnu decides for kicks he's going to go ahead and assume his form as Mohini. So who's Mohini? Anybody know? Mohini is the seductress.
Oh.
Yeah. That Vishnu, right? That Vishnu turned into during the churning of the Milky Ocean in order to get the asuras to give up that pot of the nectar of immortality, Amrita, which is also going to come back into our discussion this morning later on. So so Shiva and Mohini go strolling into the forest, and all of the women of the sages just start to fall over backwards and go running after Shiva. And this enrages the sages.
Mm.
They are, I mean, they don't know, who is this? Who are these people who come in here in violation of everything that we hold sacred and inviolate, you know? And they're coming in here and they're just wreaking havoc on our women folk.
Just by walking around?
What, just by walking around? What the heck, you know?
So dress code.
They cast a bunch of spells and they draw a horde of writhing nagas, or writhing serpents in, right? And in order to scare off these two, and Shiva takes one look at the serpents and grabs the largest one and swings it around his head and then wraps it around his neck like a garland. And the sages are like, oh my God. Whoa, okay, let's get a little bit more in our arsenal here. So they whip up a couple more spells and bring in some tigers. Shiva's like, yeah, right. So with one fingernail, he skins the largest tiger and wraps it around his waist like a loincloth, right? Which only makes him more irresistible looking. It's just like, oh my gosh. And seeing that this has no effect, the sages intoxicate the largest elephant in the forest and it comes running in a rut. And Shiva just shreds it to pieces and wraps the skin around his shoulders in like this glittering, beautiful cape, which again just makes him even more irresistible. And the sages are yet again defeated and are just almost beside themselves with rage and anger and attachment to what they think is right and good and should be done. And so they all come together and in their greatest effort, just through rage and absolute will, they bring into being the embodiment of ignorance and pride. Yeah, that guy. She's like, that guy? Yeah, that guy. That guy right
yeah.
under his feet, right? So the dwarf, yeah. So in southern India, apparently he's known as Muyalakam, but I know him as Apasmaraparusha.
Apasmaraparusha.
Yes. And he's the dwarf of ignorance and pride, the embodiment of greatest pride and arrogance and pride. Right?
Isn't Shiva standing on him?
Yeah. And Shiva, so Shiva, what does he do when this thing comes into being? Jumps right up on top of him with his foot and just starts doing the dance. The Ananda Tandava. And his braids start flying and fire surrounds him. And in that moment, the sages realize who he is. And they're like, oh. And they also realize that all of their combined efforts, all of their attachment, rigid attachment to one way of being, which we'll talk about as well later on, right, has brought this out of it, this embodiment of ignorance and pride. Because what they were trying to destroy is the very thing that they're devoted to. Right? So that story just illustrates a little bit of getting too rigid in our practices and how that can sometimes lead to arrogance. It can sometimes lead to destroying the very thing that we're reaching for. I know when I got super rigid in my asana practice, it started to hurt me because I started to practice a little too hard, too long. 1 hour turned into an hour and a half turned into 2 hours, 2 hours turned into 3 hours, and I started to really get attached to that feeling that I was getting and not paying attention to my body and to what was nourishing and nurturing for me, and it got to be where I had to do my practice like a flog, flailing myself if I didn't, right? And my piriformis got a little overstretched, and my hips started getting a little out of whack, and my low back started hurting, but I had to do my practice. You know? And I hurt myself. Yeah. So just it's a little, just a little word of warning about just paying attention to the discernment of our intellect and allowing the changes that need to come. Sometimes we need to have a little more softness in our practice, right? Sometimes we need to pay a little, you know, be a little more disciplined, you know. But there's an ebb and a flow to everything. So can we just be aware of that ebb and flow as we're moving through our lives and not get too rigid with any one thing? It's really important, especially where we're at. You know, especially where we're at, where we're coming from. Anybody have anything?
I remember reading someone said, sometimes your practice is strong, sometimes it should be mild.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. How do you know when? You listen to your body?
You listen. You listen. That's the key. Always listening. Checking in. You know. What's going on in my life right now? What's just getting, what's going on in my body? You know, where are my emotions? Is this my ego that I'm really trying to please here? This is what's actually nourishing me at a deeper level. And that's with any practice. And also, is it getting stale? You know, am I just doing this because it's a pattern? Because it's repetition, right? Am I comfortable? Am I a little too comfortable here? So, and there's a difference between complacency and contentment, right? Where we're complacent, we're not growing. Where we're content, we're able to be okay with what is, just as it is, and still progress in our practices, right? And still progress on our path. Does that make sense? Yeah.
How do you measure that? Progress, you know. I mean, that's what it is.
Power sometimes progress is moving backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Progress is moving backwards. We just have to be aware that that's part of the path, too.
You know, you do know when you can't practice anymore, something's
right.
wrong.
Right.
You know, maybe, you know, when you can't do it anymore, whatever reason, you know, we have lots of reasons why I can't practice.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do this or I got to do that. When I can't practice anymore.
What is practice?
What is practice?
What is practice?
To what you do.
Does it have to look a specific way?
No.
Yeah.
When you know you can't practice and there's nothing that you can do. You keep making excuses. You keep not practicing.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday we were talking about tips for refining mm-hmm. your practice. And what is your practice?
Mm-hmm.
You need a practice. The key, refining the key practice, the key practice,
mm-hmm.
the key opens that.
What is the key?
You know, what is the key? And you have to know what your key is. You have to know what your key practice is. And that is, that's what always informs and always informs and always informs.
What I want to say, my My personal answer to that would be awareness.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's simply the awareness. Having the awareness that, oh, okay, I'm not practicing.
You can't find that awareness, and you know you can't find that awareness.
You're still aware. You know you can't. Then you're aware.
Yeah. That is your practice.
Maybe just that is your practice in that moment.
You're looking for your practice.
As simple as that. I don't know.
I think for me, there's stuff that I have resistance.
Good question.
I have resistance to do. I don't want to do it. For reasons other than I'm, I'm going to hurt myself. But some stuff that I've... Okay,
you're avoiding
I'm,
it.
I'm
yeah.
avoiding
right,
it,
right.
And I think that's the stuff that I need to do.
Yeah.
Stuff like the least you need the most.
Sometimes, yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah. So these are all wonderful questions to kind of chew on and ruminate over and figure out for ourselves. And yeah, how do we develop that discernment? How do we develop that awareness of where we're becoming too rigid, where we're becoming too complacent? And I think it does reveal itself eventually. It does reveal itself.
They're working with people.
Working with people. Seva. Oh my gosh.
And that's a key thing came out of it. Because when we're doing this with people that do this together, you know, something happens that you couldn't get on your own.
Right. Absolutely.
I think you gotta keep it fun.
It keeps it fresh. Keeps injecting new perspective into it, which is awesome. Alright. So let's sing this one.
I wish I could stay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Namaste,
Dexter. Great Dexter. Practice this morning.
All right. Okay. So we'll sing call and response. Just open it up again with one more ohm, just for the heck of it. Just because the ohm is so amazing. Sundara Nataraja.
Shivaraja.
Chittam Parishwara Nataraja. Chittam Parishwara Nataraja. Arati Purishwara Nataraja. Arati Purishwara Nataraja. Chittam Parishwara Nataraja. Chittam Parishwara Nataraja. Arati Purishwara Nataraja. Arati Purishwara Nataraja.
Alright, you guys can do it all together. So we'll do each of the first two lines twice. And then we'll switch off the second two. When I first brought home my my Nataraj Murti, these are called Murtis, statues are called Murtis. And when I first brought it home and set it on my altar at home, I took a picture of it and posted it online. And one of my friends in India posted back, "Oh my gosh, make sure you have a Shivakami." Because it will cause disruption in the house. And it was funny because right before I posted, right after I set him on my altar, my partner just went nuts over something about, like, the bathroom sink cabinet. I don't know, just something really small. But he went just absolutely, like, bonkers over this thing. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. All of a sudden, it's like, really, you're getting that upset over this? And then I read her post and I was like, oh, okay. So I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but it was really interesting that little episode occurred right before she posted that back to me. And it's because this sorry about that. This form of Shiva really stirs up stuff. I mean, this is all about movement. And it's all about, make sure I'm still going here. Yes, I am. It's all about action and how the universe and reality work. Because it's always change. So apparently this little guy can stir some stuff up. Yeah. So the Shiva Tandava Stotram. So the Tandava is the dance of Shiva, right? And apparently, believe it or not, guess who wrote it? Who it's attributed to? Ravana. Of all people, Ravana.
Can we go back?
Yeah.
To, you know, when you bring that into your home,
yeah,
you bring so much that is you.
Mm-hmm.
So how
Absolutely.
Can your partner not be disturbed?
No, it's true, though.
Sure,
it is
true.
It is true. Because when we're in partnership with someone, that is a big part of our spiritual path.
Right.
Huge part of our spiritual path. Because so much is revealed about one another, through one another.
And this is fucking Shiva.
This is Shiva. Oh. Yes, exactly. Good point.
Yeah,
excellent point. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because these are not just murtis. These are...
Mm-mm.
This is you.
Well, this is just an outside representation, you know, of things that we can connect with in ourselves.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So this is something that, because we as human beings, we need visuals really help us. They help us learn. And a lot of us are visual learners. And so symbolism is really important.
That's such an important confirmation of who you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because just, I mean, that's...
He was actually talking about how messy I am underneath the bathroom.
Of course it would be the bathroom. What other place?
There's all kinds of symbolism that can be
used. That's where the dwarf lives, you know, right there in that bathroom.
Interesting. Okay. So, on that note... Ravana. So who's Ravana?
He's the wicked guy, isn't he?
He's the wicked guy. Yes, he is. He is the wicked guy. So remember, we were talking about attachment and rigidity, attachment to one way of being, right? So Ravana is a Rakshasa. So the Rakshasas are just that. So they tend to translate that word into demon, right? And they translate Asura into demon, and so many different, and Daitya into demon. So, but these are very, there's subtle differences between these beings. And the Rakshasas are generally people of Earth, a race of earthly beings, right? Who are attached fiercely to power. And their love of power trumps their power of love. Always. The power of love within them. Always. They always choose their level of power over the power of God. So, Ravana is in many parts of India. There's some places where he's worshipped. He's revered. He was a great holder of learning the Shastras and the Vedas. He played the Veena, the stringed instrument that you see a lot of, like Sarasvati has a Veena. You know, you see a lot of depictions of the Veena with associated with culture and learning, right? He was a great Ayurvedic physician. A lot of Ayurvedic knowledge. His tapas, his practice, was so fierce and disciplined that he impressed Brahma so much that when he asked Brahma for a boon, when Brahma was like, okay, you know, I see you, you're cutting your head off, you know, over and over and over again, you know, and I'm giving it back 10 times over, right? So he's depicted with 10 heads quite often because of this.
He just went too far when he went after Sita.
He really did. And there's a reason for that, too. There's a reason for that, too. So, Brahma gifted him with that pot of Amrita. Because he couldn't gift him with immortality, because that's just not his to give, right? But he gave him the pot of immortality, the nectar of immortality. And Ravana keeps it behind his belly button. Belly. And so this was he held that pot of immortality, right? And he kept amassing more and more power, and through his practices, through his pursuit of learning and knowledge, and his half brother was Kubera, who was the god of wealth and the holder of the direction of north. Right, so that's his half-brother. His mother was a great Daitya, and the Daityas were a race of giants, probably similar to the Nephilim that are mentioned in the Bible. So there might be some mythological / historical, you know, seed in there, some bija, you know, of hidden history that we're not commonly taught in our schools and in our accepted histories. And his father, Vishrava, I think is his name, was a great king. And his brother Kubera was the ruler of Lanka. And actually, Lanka was a city built by Vishvakarma, the architect of the gods. Beautiful golden city on the island of Lanka. And Ravana became so powerful that he demanded this city from his brother, from his half-brother, Kubera. And their father advised him just to give it up. you don't want to cross this guy. No, just give it up. So he usurped Kubera in rulership of the city of Lanka. However, when he became the ruler, even the poorest houses had vessels of gold to eat and drink from. I mean, he was a benevolent ruler. People loved him, absolutely loved him. But he wanted more and more power. He had the perfect wife. He had 3 wives, actually.
It's
but his first wife was Mandodari. And she was one of the 5 perfect virgins.
That's why he was mad.
Who were sung to, yeah. Well, but I think virgin also means chaste, so she was devoted to her husband and only her husband, you know. So Mandodari is one of the 5 perfect virgins that are sung to bring harmony into the home. And I don't know, other reasons, I'm not really versed on this, so. However, I know that she's very, you know, held in very high regard as well. And there are stories after the Ramayana that say that Mandodari and Ravana are actually the parents of Sita.
Parents to Sita?
Yes. And it was prophesied that Ravana's firstborn would be his downfall. Mm. And this is one of the reasons.
But he didn't know that?
Some stories say that he didn't know it, and that Mandodari, because she kept counseling him to stop his wicked ways, and he wouldn't do it. And she was so devoted to him that she wouldn't leave him, but she was just so mad at him that as soon as she had the baby, she didn't let him know that she was pregnant. And as soon as she had the baby, she spirited it away and had it buried in a furrow on King Janaka's land, where he found her. And Sita means furrow. It means a plowed portion of a field, right? He found her in that furrow, so he named her Sita, right? So some versions say that Ravana and Mandodari knew that the firstborn would be his downfall, and thus they abandoned the baby because they couldn't bring themselves to kill it. And some say that Mandodari did this in secret out of spite, out of revenge to her husband, because she couldn't leave him, you know, but she was mad at him, so she denied him his firstborn. So this is like this underlying attachment that Ravana has for this woman, Sita, not knowing that she's his daughter. Right? So he still didn't know, right, that he's got this bond to her, that he has to have her, right, without knowing why. But he's so driven by his attachments, it doesn't matter why.
Yeah, their attachments like that are so deep. You look forever for that.
Yeah.
That realization of that. You'll do anything to get that realization. Especially, you know, if there's a sexual thing in it. You've got to have this.
Got to have this.
Never stops, never gives up.
Yeah. And so he's so attached to gaining more and more and more power that finally he goes off and he's seeking Shiva himself to get this immortality. Has to get this boon of immortality. So he comes to the mountain of Kailash. Parvati and Shiva's home. Right? And as he's driving his chariot, the mountain's in his way. And in his arrogance, he demands that the mountain move out of his way because he can't go up, it's just too steep for the chariot, right? And the mountain's like, I don't think so. I'm a mountain. I'm not moving. It's just not how it works, right?
I don't move.
So Ravana, I mean, he's powerful. He literally picks the mountain up. And Shiva sees this, and he's like, oh, no. And with his little toe, Shiva presses the mountain back down, right? And Ravana's fingers are caught underneath, and he can't get out. Right? And he howls this scream, this roar of pain, which is what the word Ravana means. It means roaring.
Ravana?
Ravana means roaring. And it's the loudest sound Shiva's ever heard. And apparently this is how Ravana gets his name. One way, yeah. So... there's other stories around that too. And so in order to be freed, Ravana sits there and he makes all of his nerves into Vina strings and begins to pluck the strings of his nerves to create music, and he composes the Shiva Tandava Stotra.
That's freedom.
Yeah.
To be able
to sing and recite mantra while you're in intense pain. You got a mountain sitting on your hand.
Must be the blues, man.
Use your nerves.
Right. So Shiva is so impressed by this that he frees him, and then Ravana continues to do more tapasya. And he's got to think about cutting off his heads. So again, in order to prove to Shiva how devoted he is, he starts to cut off his head. And Shiva's like, okay, all right, you're good. What do you want? And Ravana demands the boon that he can't be killed by any gods, by any catastrophes, by any weapons, by any wild beasts, I think is included in that. So I don't know how the monkeys and the And the bears, well, they weren't killed. He wasn't killed by them. They were just in the army. So, yeah, but he doesn't say man, because he has such a disdain for human beings that he doesn't include men in his long list of things that he can't be killed by. And so Shiva says, okay. Of course, you should be. He already sees the outcome of this. So the rest of the story is history, where Rama becomes incarnated, Vishnu incarnates as Rama, as a human being, who forgets who he is, and who he really is. And together with Hanuman, who is the incarnation of Shiva, they go and they do battle with Ravana. So, but Ravana is apparently the author of this beautiful stotra. Good Lord, we don't have very much time to learn this, do we? Okay. And luckily, it's very, very rhythmic, super rhythmic. It looks like a lot of words, but it's super rhythmic. And we'll just go over the meaning real quick. So say, Jatatavi.
Jatatavi.
Galajjala.
Galajjala.
Pravaha.
Pravaha.
Pava.
Pava.
Pavita Tastavi.
Pavita
Tastavi. Pavitastale. Gale.
Gale.
Balambia.
Balambia.
Lambitam.
Lambitam.
Bujanga.
Bujanga.
Tunga.
Tunga.
Malikam.
Malikam.
Damad.
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 Damad. Ninadavad.
Ninadavad.
Damar.
Damar.
Vayam.
Vayam.
Chakara.
Chakara.
Chanda.
Chanda.
Tandavam.
Tandavam.
Yeah, so those double N's and double V's you take to the top of your roof of your mouth with your tongue. Tanotu.
Tanotu.
Na.
Na.
Shiva.
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 So I'm not going to break it down word by word today because we're running out of time a little bit, but basically what this says is, on the ground made holy by the sacred water that's pouring out and flowing down from the matted hair, which is like a forest, Shiva is doing the tandava. He's doing his dance. And supporting his neck are snakes adorning him and hanging down like garlands. His damaru is making the sound, damad, 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 right? Continuously weaving out that sound and filling the air all around. And Shiva performs such a passionate tandava. Oh, Shiva, please extend this auspicious dance in our beings also. So extend this experience of life, of bliss to us as well. So, and there's so much symbology with the Ganga pouring from Shiva's locks, right? The celestial river that nourishes all of our lives, that nourishes us all. So all of these energies that come out from the heavens, right? These electromagnetic forces that are the river of life.
Like only Ravana could see this.
Yes.
She could see this aspect of Shiva.
Yes, absolutely.
See himself.
And the Kundalini Shakti, the snake, right, that's wrapped around Shiva's neck, that is actually what enlivens us and gives us life, this empowerment of Shakti. And the Damaru, right, this drum that Shiva holds in his upper, I believe it's his upper right hand. Yep. Is this male and female aspect. It represents the play of opposites that our life is, right? We're all about polarities. And this is the beating of the damaru, bouncing off of these polarities, which is how we actually, our perception arises of life. Yeah. And And it's so passionate that we're completely caught up in it. In the Maya, this illusion that Shiva weaves through his pounding of his dhamma. So we'll get a little bit more into the meaning behind this.
We can do it again?
Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and do the whole...
I mean, can you come back and do this again?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do the whole stotra.
Okay, good.
So I just want to kind of get the rhythm today of how it goes in our bodies. And then next week we'll do this first one and the second verse together. Okay? But I'm in love with this stotra. So
this is a beautiful. This verse is so beautiful.
Yeah.
There's something about that.
So we'll take it just a little at a time here. Chatavi galachala.
Chatavi galachala.
Pravaha pavitastale.
Pravaha pavitastale.
Kaleva lambya lambitam.
Kaleva lambya lambitam.
Demand. know that we are divine light, we are divine shadow, we are divine wisdom, we are the divine offering. I know that's that. Namaste.
Oh, that's that.